You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
The Olympics. They're a moment of global unity that will be repeated this August in Beijing, China. They're also an opportunity for history, an opportunity for athletic excellence as athletes from all over the world gather to compete against each other in a forum that's supposed to be free from politics and other issues and other sorts of conflicts that the world experiences every day. The Olympics are also an opportunity for companies and the broadcasters of those games to make enormous amounts of money. And, of course, the Olympics are an opportunity for politics. We want to know what you think about the Olympics. Are they too commercial? Are they too opportunistically exploited by forces that have nothing to do with athletics? Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE, or you can tell us your Olympic story or your Olympic view at mytake@thetakeaway.org. Yesterday at the National Press Club, U.S. Olympic speed skater Joey Cheek spoke on behalf of 130 athletes who have signed a letter calling on China and the U.N. to stop the violence in Darfur. That's just one of the political issues, including Tibet, which we've talked about on this program, which are likely to emerge with a higher profile as we approach the Beijing Olympics in August. John Hoberman is an Olympic historian, and he joins us now from Austin, Texas. John, thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
Thinking historically now, who is it that generally uses the Olympics as an opportunity for political messages? Is it the host of the Olympics? Is it the athlete participants in the Olympics? Or is it the companies that seem to benefit so much from the Olympics, if you look back through history?
It is the host countries that want to practice the Olympic Games as a form of national self-assertion. And on sporadic occasions, it is outside groups that want to protest the policies of the host country. In 1936, it was Catholics, Jews, and union groups in the United States that tried to keep the U.S. out of the 1936 Berlin, the so-called Nazi Olympics. They narrowly failed to do that. This year, it's a crowded protest market out there. There's a Darfur. Anywhere that China goes to find oil, there seem to be human rights violations. And this has turned out to be a much more complicated Olympiad than the Chinese had been counting on.
You know, I guess what's interesting, if you look back in history, you alluded to the Berlin Olympics, where the host country really had a political message they were disseminating at the time, Nazi Germany. But you've got the 72 Olympics, the Munich Olympics, where a political message emerged because of a horrible act of terrorism. I guess what you also see is that athletes are rarely, it seems, involved, with some very notable exceptions. Can you describe them?
Yeah, that is absolutely correct. Elite athletes tend to be apolitical. They are focused almost entirely on getting into the kind of shape that is going to make their athletic careers successful. The iconic moment of political protest in Olympic history is, of course, Tommy Smith and John Carlos at the Mexico City Games in 1968 with their black-gloved fists up in the air, making a point about American racism at an international event known as the Olympics. This was an absolutely extraordinary occasion.
And it changed your life, right?
It changed my life in the sense that these guys got me interested in studying the sports world in a serious way.
That's interesting. You know, the 1980 Olympics, which, of course, the U.S. Boycotted, which were held in the Soviet Union, was a very bitter experience for athletes around the world. Historically speaking, were athletes, even if they understood the reasons for the boycott, harmed by the political message that came out of that very contentious Olympics?
Well, it was contentious because you have two interest groups head-to-head, and it's a zero-sum game. If you're Jimmy Carter and you want to make a point about the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan in December of 79, and I remember that very well. I mean, that event produced a book out of me. I was so interested in that, that either you take the protest of a dictatorship's crimes, in this case, against another country, Afghanistan, seriously to the point where you cancel ceremony, or you take a very different viewpoint and say the athletes' rights are supreme in this case. They've trained for 4 years, 8 years to get to this point. You're not going to accomplish anything anyway except for making a moral point. So why do it?
Well, let's talk
irreconcilable views.
Let's talk for a moment about the political commercial interests at the Games. Is there any expectation that corporations would use their economic leverage to make political statements? There's already a report in Portfolio Magazine that suggests that companies are issuing very, very blanket kinds of general statements about political issues that relate to China. Quickly.
I would think that this also would be a very unusual behavior. I mean, the multinationals are in there. They're paying huge sums to the IOC for access eventually to an enormous Chinese market.
Well, John Hoberman, thank you very much. We will watch the opening ceremonies for signs of those iconic moments that changed your life back in 1968. Olympic historian John Hoberman, the University of Texas, Austin, who's the author of The Olympic Crisis, Sport, Politics, and the Moral Order. He has an essay, The Olympics Think Again. It's in the July issue of Foreign Policy magazine, which is on newsstands today. Thank you, John.
Thank you very much.
One interesting note to that is there have been reports that Germany's Angela Merkel and Britain's Gordon Brown say they will not attend the opening games as their statement against some of China's policies.
Yeah, where do the political messages come from for the Olympics this time around? It's probably going to be in the places like you're talking about, world leaders.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.